Morning has turned to afternoon.
Good afternoon, everyone.
But the grind carries on.
Not just the grind physically, but the grind mentally.
The Midday Grind, featuring a couple of TV jockeys who've also been through the radio wars.
Serious?
Martin Kilcoyne.
I was a little lit, so I was saying whatever I wanted.
And Charlie Marlowe.
Our top story tonight, John Jay will be back tomorrow. Here's him getting a hit in 2012.
It's the Midday Grind on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
Welcome to the Midday Grind here on 590 The Fan. Charlie Marlowe en route from Blues out at the St. Louis Mills. They've got the Bruins tomorrow night. Blues and Bruins. Cardinal baseball. We are now... Today's what the... I don't know what day... It's the 20th today?
Yes.
So we are nine days from the season opener at Citi Field in New York. What a weird route to New York. They're going to play in Montreal next Monday, Tuesday, which is kind of cool. And I'm assuming... The Major League Baseball is just trying to gauge interest there or kind of keep interest
in
Montreal.
Yeah, they've done this the last few years, having an exhibition game in Quebec.
In the Olympic Stadium, which is still there, outskirts of Montreal, just sitting there, the old stadium, and they'll play the Toronto Blue Jays for a couple of nights before heading to New York.
Aledmys Diaz gets to face his old team.
Randall Grichuk
gets to face
Jaime
his own.
Jaime Garcia? Yeah,
maybe he'll start one of those two games. Are you as bothered as I am that for the first 2 weeks of the season for the Cardinals, there are no games on Friday?
It's a little weird. You got to have that open date if you get the rain out on opening day. It's not altering my life, but it does look a little weird when you look at the schedule.
It just bothers me a tad. I like watching Cardinal baseball on Fridays.
Well, you're going to have a few more days off. That's the whole idea, right?
Yeah,
why we're starting
week,
early,
right?
Days off. And they do play. God, there's a ton of games. Just a ton of games. So a little more downtime. I think that probably... Even though I get it, they stay at the Ritz, they fly on chartered flights, they make millions of dollars. It is a grind, man. I mean, what was the amount of days off on a typical schedule for the year? You know, I mean, would you get like 1 to 2 a month, maybe about 12 a year? So you add to that this year. I don't mind the early start. Get spring training over with. Way too long. I know John Mozeliak, I think he said it wasn't, that they need all this time to stretch out the pitchers, but come on.
They're stretched out now.
Way too long. In fact, I was looking at some of the numbers, and I don't know what you read into it. Frank was talking about the pitching where Wainwright and Weaver both have ERAs below 1. I think what stands out for Weaver also, he's got 13 and a third, and he's got 15 strikeouts. Does that translate? I don't know. Last year, remember the Cardinals were really good in Florida? Like, hey, all right, they're a better team. And it really is just kind of stupid. But Colton Wong's got 6 stolen bases. He's stealing every time he gets on. He's just not getting on a whole lot. He's hitting 161. Batting average doesn't matter, right? Tommy Pham, the big season coming up for him, he's hitting 216. Do any of these numbers mean anything? I think the guy that matters is like a Jairo Munoz. Otherwise, you'd never care about this guy. Now, because he's been hitting this spring, he's actually on your radar. I don't know if he's going to make the team, but he's got 15 hits. Molina's got 3 home runs, leads the team so far in home runs. But most of the stats, you look at it, and you're like, I don't really care. Fowler's hitting 235. Okay, doesn't matter. They play all these games. They get stretched out. They're in the cage for hours and hours. And as soon as the season starts, you can just throw all this away. Although Miles Michaelis being better at least ends that conversation because I'm sure it was getting tiresome for the team.
Yes, and I do agree that I think people try to make too much out of spring training stats. I do think with Wainwright, last year his spring ERA was over 7. And we all know that carried over into the regular season. So if this is his way of getting momentum moving into April, then it's a good thing. Player you didn't mention, because I'm not sure if he was on the stat sheet or not, because he's no longer on the Major League roster, is Jack Flaherty. He had 13 strikeouts per 9 innings in spring training. I think that was wildly impressive.
Yeah, his ERA was high, but you're right. So it was 20 strikeouts in 13 innings. And I have heard John Mozeliak say that he's basically sitting there as the safety valve. They're keeping him as a starting pitcher in case they need him. Kind of unfair to him because he had a great spring. But they haven't ruled out he could also be a piece in the bullpen later. And it speaks to their depth. That's what they keep pointing to. We've got depth if we need it.
Dry powder.
But Flaherty's ERA is high. But does ERA matter? I know wins don't matter anymore.
I think ERA
batting
matters.
Average. Tommy Pham told me batting average doesn't matter. I keep forgetting what does matter.
Whip. ERA plus.
Razor rating. The John Duan Fielding Bible.
The Vaughn Index.
Is there a Doug Vaughn Index?
No, the Vaughn Index is whatever he wants it to be.
And this would be a good time to apply that, looking at spring stats. Kenny Wallace is coming up at 12:30, but I'd also like to salute, in light of St. Patrick's Day having come and gone, I stumbled into this story last night. I'd never heard of the man before, but his name is Kevin Wesley. He's an Irish-American. Apparently, he's got a radio show on Long Island while also teaching Irish dance. You know, the rare combo, radio host, Irish dance instructor, Long Island. Got attention a few years ago for doing this, but he's continued the charge. And he took on Walmart, you know, the biggest grill out there in the shopping world, because he was bothered by all of the offensive Irish shirts that were being sold in the lead up to St. Patrick's Day. So he got a lot of attention a few years ago. What he did was he would go to all these Walmarts and buy up what he considered to be offensive Irish T-shirts. And then he'd return them on March 18th under their return policy. So nobody could buy them, which is actually sort of ingenious.
Yeah.
There's this old picture of him with this huge tub of just Irish shirts that he's going to later return. But it shows a few examples. And he said because of the attention he got in 2016, 2017, 2018, they stopped selling offensive St. Patrick's Day T-shirts.
Do you have examples? I wonder how offensive they are.
And now he said the problem is they're selling them online. So he's trying to get attention for that. This T-shirt reads, "Need help with a drinking problem? Give us a call today. Irish Anonymous." Oh, the places you'll throw up.
Mm.
And it shows a bunch of different places you'll throw. Drunk Lives Matter. And it's got a little shamrock leprechaun hat. Then there's the Drunk-O-Meter T-shirt. Sober, buzzed, drunk, hammered. And then the needle is pegged to the far right. Irish.
Ah.
So I love the idea he would go buy these up and then return them after the fact. And apparently Walmart took notice, stopped selling them. He said the majority of them are cute. They've got the shamrock. You've got a leprechaun. But some are offensive to the Irish. He said stereotypes are not acceptable, no matter how acceptable they may be among the public. For example, Family Guy. When flying to Ireland, I don't know if you remember the episode, they're in the plane, they're up in the air. And the kid says something to the dad about, "Are all the people in Ireland drunks?" He said, "Oh, that's what we call a stereotype, son." And then the plane is skidding down the runway because there's so many beer cans and beer bottles and whiskey bottles. They're actually crushing the cans and bottles as they land. That's one of those stereotypes, other than this, God bless Kevin Wesley for taking up this charge. But for the most part, people like the Irish don't really care.
Now, last hour, we discussed you offending a bunch of German people.
Correct.
By using a slur.
Correct.
Live on television.
I regret it. Once again, 16 years after the fact.
He said sauerkraut without the sour.
Would like to issue. Come on, Rock.
Good Lord, Martin.
And then Frank admitted he was once called Chico by a taunting crowd because he may have had a pencil-ish mustache.
It was a good way to end the show. Are you bothered then by these T-shirts?
Someone randomly threw out a Italian slur at me during a game when I was in like eighth grade, and it startled me so much, not because it offended me, just because I didn't see it coming at all. I was like, I didn't think other people threw that out just casually anymore.
Like, I thought we were better than that.
I thought
we'd move forward.
It was 2004, darn it.
Most of the T-shirts are bright and cheery. However, some depict the Irish as having a drinking problem.
Oh.
And then this guy's just got this tub of T-shirts. Thumbs up.
Martin may or may not have admitted that he was happy to find out that the City Museum does sell alcohol yesterday.
No,
not to fulfill a stereotype.
This is so disappointing to me because now one of my favorite Irishmen, a man who was the Grand Marshal of the parade this year, probably sends in the worst stereotypical Irishman jokes I've ever seen in my entire
life.
Yeah,
actually, Brian McKenna would love those T-shirts.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure he might have taken some of those T-shirts verbatim and sent them in as text in the last week. Or use them as taglines when he's on the air.
We cannot be offended, much like Kenny Wallace when you talk about most redneck thing you've done today, or you can't offend him. He likes to own it. He's not afraid to own it. Also, Cardinal-related, Busch Stadium, I think since it rolled out in 2006, most people are like, yeah, it's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't And you have people from out of town, your friends, oh, it's nice. I like, you can walk around. Hey, yeah, I like it. Okay.
The appeal was always the product on the field, not so much the ballpark itself.
So it does surprise when you hear a ranking, and there is a ranking for everything, but Forbes, the little cachet, the ranking of all 30 major league ballparks from first to worst. Now, granted, it's one person, Maury Brown, who's a national baseball writer, but he goes through somewhat thoughtful about why he ranks them where he ranks them. And you guys already know the answer, so I can't exactly throw it out there. Rock, do you know the answer to where he put Busch Stadium? Do you already know the answer? You don't. Okay, so where would you guess? This is a national baseball writer, and he's ranking them all. And first, I'll give you this. He said, my mythology. I looked at the overall aesthetics of a ballpark design, including integration with additional structures like Baltimore and San Diego, how they integrated the warehouses and the old metal warehouse, and the visuals from within the seating bowl or surrounding views, amenities offered at the facility, historic relevance, external development that adds to the experience. So those are his qualifications. This is not like best deals, like cheapest tickets, best beer selection.
Yeah, I'm
going to
be a little pessimistic on this one. I'm going to go 24th.
Wow. Why do you hate the Cardinals?
I don't hate the Cardinals.
It's just like everything you named. I mean, is there any history like connected? I mean, do you feel a lot of history when you go into Busch 3? There's some other things. Do you feel like they've done a good job?
The ghost of Sam Mutual hangs out there.
Hey, do you feel like they've done a good job of integrating the surrounding stuff into the same motif?
What was there to integrate?
That's a fair point, but
It's
not their fault. I'm just saying, based off the criteria that Martin listed, I started at, like, you know, 13th because I'm not the biggest Busch 3 fan in the first place, and I kind of started knocking it down when he hit stuff that I think that they naturally probably got knocked down for there. Maybe 24 is a little low. Maybe 20.
To your point.
So bottom third.
Yes.
So my point is your point.
It's ahead of all the ones that are falling apart.
That most people, I think, in St. Louis would say, oh, I enjoy Busch Stadium. I enjoy going to the games. Mostly I'm a big Cardinal fan, and they've done their best to kind of add something new every year. I do like the view of the arch, but, boy, there's some really cool parks out there, and I'm a baseball geek, and I've gotten in my car, and I've gone to all these other cities. It's probably in the middle somewhere is what you – I think that's a reasonable guess.
And for me, I personally am biased because I'm still nostalgic because I loved Busch 2.
Busch 2.
I loved Busch 2, and so that kind of knocks it
down. So the Forbes list will surprise you, Matt Rocchio, because –
How about that? Good.
Third.
What?
Third.
Yeah. Oh, my God, I'm so happy.
Third overall. And again, for the mythology that this guy used, Forbes.com, overall aesthetics of the ballpark design, integration with additional structures – also, view from the seating bowl, amenities offered at the facility, historic relevance, and external development, which I guess he would include Ballpark Village.
You know what? Did this ranking come out after the Joya's salami sandwich announcement?
That puts it up the rock.
You know what? I almost forgot about that. That would have moved it up at least 15 spots in my mind.
Top of the list, no surprise, San Francisco.
Gorgeous.
AT&T Park. You can't go wrong. I mean, you're sitting on the bay.
Right.
If you've ever been inside there, the seating, and I haven't been there a while, but it's fairly simple. It's just the layout. You can't beat it. I mean, you got the boats sitting out there in the bay waiting for the home runs. I mean, it'd be hard to screw that up. Now, if somebody had built it and, like, turned it the other way and had the opening facing the city, like, you forgot the water?
That's what Shea Stadium was, wasn't it? Where, like, downtown Manhattan was, like, behind home plate.
The other way.
And if they had just, like, spun it around, because it was open in the outfield.
Hey, we don't care about the Yankees.
You could have seen.
You're in our borough.
Manhattan.
AT&T, number one according to this list. Camden Yards.
Also beautiful.
One of the all-time classics. And, again, if you're inside, it's fairly simple. From the green seats to there's not a lot of gimmickry going on around the building. He said AT&T Park, home of the Giants, located on the bay. The ball is hit out right field land in McCovey Cove. That is a true gem. Great views of downtown. The great views of downtown. I guess if you're walking through the building, not so much watching on TV. Trolley access, activity around the ballpark. Way improved over Candlestick, obviously. Oriole Park at Camden Yards. You got the B&O Warehouse, of course. Downtown, the harbor, the inner harbor blocks away. But it says, rounding out my top five, Busch Stadium. Thanks to the incredible views of the Gateway Arch, which is true, and downtown St. Louis, that's why he has it as number three. Dodger Stadium, fourth, classic view of Chavez Ravine. The fact that it feels very modern despite being the third oldest ballpark in all of Major League Baseball. And number five, he went with PNC in Pittsburgh, which I would have to put ahead of Bush.
Which I would, too. I haven't been to Dodger Stadium. I went to PNC years ago. And that's almost like a minor league ballpark in terms of how it's set up and that there's no bad seats. If you're in the upper deck, you're close to the action.
Looking at just the shots from around Dodger games, I can't believe you would rank the shots of St. Louis over Chavez Ravine. I think it's gorgeous, personally, but that's just me.
Part of Dodger Stadium is the history. Like, wow, Sandy Koufax pitched here. Drysdale. This is, you know, the sort of used to run it because it's been around forever.
I agree. That's why I'm a little bit surprised.
So I'm thinking because of history was one of the qualifications. Where does Wrigley fall? Because there are people. I love going to Wrigley, but there are people. It's a dump.
Yes, yeah, there's not much history.
My problem with Wrigley,
they haven't had a lot of big.
My problem with Wrigley is that I've been there twice, and one time I was one of like the 18 people every game who gets sit down in a seat that has no eyesight because there's a beam in front of
the home
plate.
Yeah, I think obstructed views should knock it down.
Yeah, like that has to knock it down. I think out of the top 10, but I think probably 11th is a
I've had one of those seats before.
It's infuriating,
and you're literally there's a beam right in front of you.
You're not watching home plate at all. You can't.
They should remove that seat. I guess you know what you're getting when you purchase it. All right, so rounding out his top 10, Coors Field.
Which also should be in front of Busch Stadium.
And maybe, I have to think about it, but maybe one of the true originals in terms of the whole area exploding.
Yes.
Where lower downtown, Lodo, my dad used to live out in Denver. I went to a bunch of Rockies games. That area was, there was like nothing there.
There's a bunch of, a lot of fun bars down there.
And now it just exploded. You'd love it. A lot of craft beer. Coors Field, and they got the view of the Rockies. They're underrated, maybe at this point, maybe almost kind of taken for granted.
And even Busch Stadium is starting to copy off Coors because they were one of them. And
we added
and Cleveland.
We added mountains under the Gateway Arch.
But I think Denver and Cleveland were among the first ballparks to kind of realize, well, those really high upper deck seats most of the time are empty, so let's refurnish that and just kind of make that a hangout area.
And that's what they're doing in right field this year.
Yes.
Well, Denver has the rock pile, I think, where you can pay like a dollar or two and sit up high in the far left bleachers. And this year, it's the Bud Light Zone, maybe, in right field, where you just – it's the idea that the Blues have of a Bud Light Zone.
You can sleep in and then go to the Bud Light Zone at Busch Stadium.
You basically don't have to watch the game. Fenway, number 7. Kauffman Stadium, number 8. True story, I've never been to a Royals game in Kansas City.
It's nice. I think And I think Miller Park kind of suffers from this, too. Ballparks are weird when they're not downtown, to me. It's just awkward when, and this is the way Kauffman is, it's away from downtown Kansas City. It's just in the giant parking lot along with the football stadium. So, and they tailgate and they try to make it fun, but if you want to do something after the game, kind of is a buzzkill when you have to hop in your car and drive 20 minutes.
Want to take a tour of Arrowhead? We're right here.
Right.
Kauffman would be solidly in that spot, I think, if the view wasn't just 70. like it's a real. I love the open. I love the way it opens up.
Why do you hate
and
historical
I love the,
highways?
I love the feel. I love the way that it's. I love it doesn't feel too crowded at any point, even when it's a relatively sold out game. But that view is just. I mean, it's just look at the highway.
Well, also it's Kansas City and they suck.
Oh, we forgot to throw that in there. St. Louis sports host. Petco Park, San Diego 9th, Wrigley Field 10th, the worst stadium according to this Forbes ranking.
Petco was 9th.
Tropicana Field in St. Petersburg.
Where was Oakland?
Oakland was second to
last.
Okay,
that's a dump.
Because that's a terrible
stadium. That's
a
concrete dump.
Does Miami immediately jump back ahead of Oakland if they get rid of that monstrosity in center field?
No, they should leave
that
there. That is beautiful.
And for being brand new, relatively speaking, brand new, they're 26th in terms of like just – so they just built
it. I wonder how much of the aesthetics of how it was built played into that. They ruined the economy of an entire city just to build this ballpark. I cannot put it in the top 10.
And as Marlins man pointed out to us, he said there's no – public transportation. He says there's no way to get there.
Jesus.
Oh, yeah, about that. Phoenix has got a bad stadium, 27th. The White Sox, the name that's always changing. It was the Cell for a while. Now it's
guaranteed rate with an arrow pointing down.
Yes. There it is. A little fun stadium talk here as we get closer to opening day at Busch. Number 3. So maybe the Cardinals can sell that. Well, we won 83 games, but we were third in the Forbes ratings. Did you see that? Something else.
Third
to sell.
In the standings, third in the Forbes ratings.
Hey, since we're talking,
get ready
Cardinal
to pay
baseball,
a $12 Hardee's meal.
Don't forget, you can get tickets online. Disregard anything negative that Rock may have said. You can buy your Cardinal tickets. Check out the view if you haven't been. Get the joyous hot salami. 2018 season single game tickets on sale. They start at just $5. The upcoming season has great matchups. 3-weekend series with the Cubs. They'll play the Mets, interleague with the Royals, the Indians. Promotional schedule is out. If you like jerseys, bobbleheads, hats, there's something for everyone. Get those tickets at cardinals.com. There's only one Cardinal baseball. And don't forget, Schnucks brings you our high school athlete of the week. You can vote online at 590thefan.com. It's been a fun promotion teaming up with Schnucks, saluting the local athletes, talking to the local high school coaches. 590thefan.com is where you get to vote. We always pass along who our winner is, and they get presented a nice little TV award at the end of the week. It's the High School Athlete of the Week, brought to you by Schnucks, where they have had the taste of Italy going on in honor of Chico and Fred, our good friend here in the 10 and 11 o'clock hour. Great St. Patrick's Day.
In-depth questions from him.
Yeah, Frank had a big day today between Dale Brown and then Dr. Rick.
Yeah, did he get two good questions from Dr. Rick?
I think he got two. He got one from Dale Brown.
But let's be honest, it doesn't count. If Dr. Rick says, ask me about this topic, and then you ask about this topic, and he says, that's a great question. I'm like, well, wait a minute.
I didn't know one of those was a spoon-fed good question.
Now, perhaps Frank took the topic and phrased it so well that he got himself a great question out of it. But Dale Brown was great. That's where, if you missed it, that'll be on the web later.
That'll be on in a little bit, yes. After the show, I'll be able to post it all up. That even exceeded my expectations for that interview.
And did you get the part at the end, clip it off, where he said,
I deserve a raise.
Brian Hoffman deserves a raise.
He told me that this morning when I was driving in when he called me.
Frank spent all this time worried about Tommy Pham. What about his producer sitting right here?
Right, exactly.
So the point is, Schnucks brings you the High School Athlete of the Week. Stop by any area Schnucks for all your grocery needs. Or if you're at home and you can't get out, they deliver. That's right. Go to schnucks.com for that. Kenny Wallace, Tuesdays with Kenny, coming up here on 590 The Fan. Are you ready for it?